at Lithium Report, the place where the news is never hidden and the truth always wins. Today, since we are a Christian news show, we'll start with a passage from the Bible before we get into the news. 1 John 2:22-24. Who is a liar but he that denies Jesus is the Christ? He is the Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. Whosoever denies the Son, the same has not the Father. But he that acknowledges the Son has the Father also. Let that therefore abide in you, which you have heard from the beginning. If that which you have heard from the beginning shall remain in you, you also shall continue in the Son and in the Father. The Antichrist, one must deny Jesus is the Christ. Islam denies Jesus is God. All right, he denies that God is a father because they deny that God has a son. By this definition, that makes the author Muhammad an antichrist, as well as the religion Islam. It claims it has the same God as the Jews, but has no understanding of who the God of the Jews was or is. The leader and creator of Islam, Muhammad, targeted tribes of Jews, committing a genocide on one of them. But remember, that which is true, that which is truth, is older than that which is a lie. The truth here has been around from the beginning of time as we know it. John 1 tells us Jesus was at creation, and without him nothing was made. Deuteronomy 6:4 tells us the Jewish concept of God is a united one. That is what the word one, echad, there means. That is the center of which all Judaism is based on. So let that truth which is older remain in you. So shall you continue in the Son and in the Father. Lord God, we thank you for being who you are, Lord. We just ask that you would use us that we could proclaim that you are the Christ, the very Son of God, who came to save us from our sins. Use us that we may not be silent, but strong and fierce in our declaration of who you are by our words and by our life as an example of your love. In Jesus' name, amen. Now let's get into the news. Wow. I don't know how many people know there was violence on Inauguration Day. That's just yesterday we're talking about. CNS News had the story. They wrote that the only violence on Inauguration Day came from the far left, and it happened in the usual places. Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington. Two events in Portland on Wednesday resulted in property damage and arrest. Portland police said as anti-government and anti-fascist activities protested Joe Biden's presidency. Are you catching this? The leftists were protesting Biden. They will eat their own. They definitely will eat their own. Hello, Chief. Thank you for joining us. Police said around 150 people marched to the headquarters of Oregon's Democratic Party on Wednesday afternoon. Some smashed windows and vandalized the building. Officers made 8 selective arrests. Are you catching the selective term here? With charges ranging from felony criminal mischief, possession of destructive device, and riot. During the riot, weapons were seized, including Molotov cocktails, knives, batons, chemical spray, and a crowbar. Did you notice they didn't have any arrests for weapons? Yeah. Social media and press reports noted that protesters were dressed in black and spray painted an anarchist symbol over the Democrat Party sign. They marched under a banner reading, "We don't want Biden. We want revenge for police murders, imperialist wars, and fascist massacres." Later Wednesday, around 9 p.m., a group of 150 protested at the Federal ICE building in Portland. Some in the crowd threw rocks at a federal building. Police said, and others were seen carrying pepper balls, guns, electronic control weapons similar to tasers, large fireworks, shields, and rocks. Police did not say how many people were arrested at that melee. In an earlier, more peaceful protest in Portland's Irving Park, speakers complained that a Biden administration is not leftist enough. KOIN television footage from Portland's Irving Park showed one protester calling Biden a feckless puppet of the centrist Democratic establishment, who is only president because of his ties to corporate interests. That we can agree on. I don't know if it's just corporate interest. He likes money, and he gets it wherever he can. Another protester told the crowd, "We have a president in the White House who does not want the change that we need." In Seattle, KIRO-TV reported that several buildings, including a federal immigration court, were damaged and multiple people were arrested Wednesday night after protests against President Biden and federal agencies turned violent on Seattle streets. Glass also was shattered at banks, the Nakamura Federal Courthouse, Amazon Go stores, and the original Starbucks in Pike Place. This is not a peaceful protest. We've had multiple sites that have been vandalized, Seattle Police Officer Valerie Carson told KIRO-TV. So, Chief, is this you on the line? If it's you, I'll take your call, but I'm not sure. If you could tell me in the chat room, I'll take your call. All right. Next up, the president of Goya Food seems to understand what's happening. I don't know if you were aware of what he said last week. It's important to understand. Okay. I don't know who's calling. If you want to go in the chat room and leave a message and tell me who you are and what you want to talk about, great. Otherwise, I cannot take your call. Okay. The president of Goya Foods, I said, and really understands what's happening. And let me just get this up. Here we go. This is interesting because he said this last week, and it seems to be almost as much as it possible, it's foretelling of what's going to happen. This is by Gary Du for Epoch Times. Robert Unanu, Goya Foods president and CEO, said on Friday, "The political left has weaponized the Chinese Communist Party virus to take away God, culture, history, and liberty from the people of the United States. The problem is it's a political year, the weaponized coronavirus. Unfortunately, they shut down this economy. The worst thing we could do is shut down our economy, kill our spirit. We need a reason to get up in the morning. God, family, work, and they are taking away our spirit. They're taking away our ability to work," Unanu told Fox News on January 15th. "We are one nation under God. We're not one nation under Twitter. We're not one nation under big media or under central government. We're trying to have media, big tech, control our lives. The government control our lives," he said. "They want to cancel God. They want to cancel our speech. They want to cancel our culture, our history, our liberty. They want to control us. The few controlling the many, like a bunch of sheep. None of these people care about us. We cannot move away from God. We need to love and to build, not to hate and destroy," he added. Unanu said Goya experienced its most successful year in 2020 after leftists tried to boycott his products. Unanu made sympathetic remarks about Trump earlier in 2020, comparing the president's entrepreneurialism to that of his grandfather's. He remarks ire among Trump's critics with celebrities and politicians, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and former Democratic presidential candidate Julian Castro, denouncing the brand or calling for Goya boycotts. Ocasio-Cortez was nominated Employee of the Month in December by Goya after her call to boycott Goya stimulated a tenfold growth in sales, Unanu told the Michael Barry Show. Unanu further criticized the left, saying that their handling of the CCP virus pandemic was done for political gain. They essentially declared martial law. "It's the worst thing we could have done just for political gain. I think it's criminal. I think it's immoral to shut down this economy for this basically political reasons," he said. Unanu called on people to get closer to God during this difficult time. "We need not to move away from God. We need to move closer to God," he said. Now, I agree with that statement wholly. I have created a book that you can find on Amazon, and it's written to everyone. It's a message of hope in a time of quarantine. I put this out, I believe, in March. So this is something to pick up if you want to get closer to God. Well, I don't know if you're paying attention. Biden's staff are being rewarded for their past failures. Robert Spencer is one of those who's been catching this type of thing. And let's get this working. And the joy of sometimes when things don't go the way you want them to. There we go. And it's freezing. Great. The joy of things not going the way you want them to. And in the middle of freezing. Okay, let me just try this the other way. And I tried to use two different screens, and I have one screen totally frozen. Sometimes life doesn't go the way you want it. Well, life is not always the way you want it. So I can say, here we go. Biden is already rewarding failure. Again, this is by, it was just a little slow, by Robert Spencer. When Sundown Joe takes office on Wednesday, which he's already done, the old gang will be back in the saddle again. The foreign policy establishment hacks, who have done nothing but fail, and fail again, and in response to getting rewarded, not with dismissal and forced return to private life, but with honors, awards, and promotions. American Foreign Policy reported Saturday that Biden has appointed Wendy Sherman, whose chief claim to fame is negotiating the notorious Iran nuclear deal, to be Deputy Secretary of State. Classic example of failing up. Biden said of Sherman, an anti-Russia career diplomat, Victoria Nuland, whom he named Under Secretary for Political Affairs, that they have secured some of the most defining national security and diplomatic achievements in recent memory. I am confident that they will use their diplomatic experience and skill to restore America's global and moral leadership. America's back, unquote. Oh, wow. Yeah. America is back. America is now into communism is what we're in. Well, Robert Spencer continues, that may be overstating the case, but there is no doubt that this disastrous State Department experts are back. Sherman is getting her promotion nearly 2 years after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled 55,000 pages of documents and 183 CDs demonstrating that Iran did not come clean about its nuclear program and that it pursued a program to design, produce, and test 5 warheads with 10 kiloton of TNT yield for integration on missiles. When Iran's leaders denied that they intended to construct nuclear weapons, Netanyahu said they were blatantly lying. He charged that Iran lied about never having a secret nuclear program. Secondly, even after the deal, it continued to expand its nuclear program for future use. Thirdly, Iran lied by not coming clean to the IAEA. Wendy Sherman's Iran nuclear deal was, according to Netanyahu, based on lies, based on Iranian deception. The Islamic Republic Fordo nuclear plant, he said, was designed from the get-go for a nuclear weapons project, for Project Ahmad. We can now prove that the Project Ahmad was a comprehensive program to design, build, and test nuclear weapons. We can also prove that Iran is secretly storing Project Ahmad material to use at a time of its choosing to develop nuclear weapons. In the two intervening years, Netanyahu's presentation has been mocked, derided, or ignored altogether, but it has never been disproven, even aside from it. As the Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran shows, the deal was foredoomed in the first place and had no chance of being effective to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. The deal runs out in 2025. What about after that? Nothing. Apparently, at that point, Iran would be free to build nuclear weapons with no objections from anyone. Even worse were the deal's provisions for verification. It contains the provision that Iran could delay requested International Atomic Energy Agency inspections for up to 24 days. Ample time to clean up for inspectors. The return to the deal will also be accompanied by a removal of sanctions that will get Western cash flowing once again to the Islamic Republic. What did the Iran's mullahs do with $1 billion Barack Obama showered upon them? They finance jihad terror groups around the world. What will they do now with the Biden money? Almost certainly the same thing. What's more, the deal in its 159 pages went to a tremendous detail about how the Iran nuclear program and how it's to be temporarily restricted in various ways, also expiated at length on exactly what sanctions were to be removed. But it was conspicuously lacking in specifying penalties for Iran not holding to the agreement. There was vague talk about the sanctions being reimposed, but no concrete guidelines about how that was to be done, and nothing said about recovering money given to Iran in the interim. These and other turns were obviously absurdly easy on Iran. What exactly did the rest of the world get out of this agreement when it was originally concluded? Only a newly flush and increasingly bellicose Iran, thanks to Barack Obama. And now Joe Biden is rewarding the chief architect of this mess with a promotion for her incompetence. Nor is Wendy Sherman alone. The entire foreign policy arm of the Biden administration is set to be staffed by these failures, phonies, and frauds. But with the establishment media doing everything it can to put the best possible face on the coming fiasco, most Americans will have no idea what is going on or why. Yes, this is truly sad. And this is just a small thing. Let's keep talking about his goals. I mean, we're talking about goals that are nothing but evil. So let's look at some of the things he's done in executive orders and pay attention to this. How about this? Biden has already made a rule that you must wear a mask when on federal land. So he's basically making rules for you, but not for him. Rules for you and me, not for him. So today, Craig Bannister covered this story. It's titled Biden Caught on Camera Violating His Own Mask Mandate on Federal Land While Addressing Reporters. After being inaugurated and subsequently issuing a requirement that coronavirus masks must be worn on all federal property on Wednesday, President Joe Biden was caught on camera doing the very thing he prohibited. Biden signed executive orders to require masks on all federal grounds and asked agencies to extend moratoriums on evictions and federal student loan payments, the Washington Post reported Wednesday. That very evening, Biden was caught on camera violating his own mask requirement on federal land, the Daily Wire's Ryan Saavedra reported. Despite his order, Biden was seen late on Wednesday night visiting the Lincoln Memorial not wearing a mask while he stood on several feet away from another person. You can go to Twitter and you can find these pictures. It's hilarious. He gave this order. It's okay. You have to follow it, but he doesn't. That's what Democrat rule is all about. In addition to the video, Saavedra's article displays a Getty image photo of the maskless Biden standing with reporters, all of whom appear to be wearing masks inside the Lincoln Memorial. Biden has repeatedly chided Donald Trump for not wearing a mask, as the New York Times has reported. Biden once called Trump a fool for failing to don a mask. Well, Biden also ended national security measures to put in place to protect Americans from persons attempting to come to the United States from terrorist-endorsing countries. And countries that cannot vet their own citizens. This is extremely important. What is happening in today's society is pretty scary. When you think about Biden, he has just removed a major security mechanism that should have everyone in the world concerned. We're talking about he has now allowed citizens from countries that endorse terrorism. He's now encouraged them to come to the United States. So people who come from, countries that endorse or encourage terrorism now have been given a pass. This is not what I would call cool. This is dangerous. You and I are in trouble. Well, Todd Benzman has the story here. He wrote yesterday an article titled "Trump's Travel Ban Fixed a Real World Security Problem." its demise promises a return to peril. Todd writes, a few years before President Donald Trump instituted the so-called travel ban on now 13 countries, the 21-year-old Sudanese citizen Mahmoud Amin Mohammed Al-Hassan entered the United States with his siblings and mother on temporary legal permanent resident visas. At the time, Sudan was a U.S.-designated state sponsor of terror and would not have been willing or frankly even able to provide American adjudicators with any intelligence or background history about Al-Hassan for a thorough security vetting. Within a year of his arrival, Al-Hassan was on a social media espousing violent anti-American jihad under a pseudonym, according to court records from his later terrorism prosecution. The FBI got onto him in late 2015, and by 2016, just before Trump was elected and shuttered almost all visas for Sudan under his infamous misnamed Muslim travel ban executive order, Al-Hassan had pled guilty to plotting with a co-conspirator to, quote, chop heads with ISIS in Syria. Shortly before Trump implemented the travel ban, a Virginia judge sentenced him to 11 years in prison on terrorism charges. The Al-Hassan story is but one of many that would never have unfolded under the Trump restrictions. These underscore a problem with President Joe Biden's hasty repeal of his predecessor's travel ban on the 13 nations. The move does not take into account that travel ban countries don't, won't, or can't cooperate with American visa adjudicators who are responsible for learning whether visa applicants are hiding experience as violent radicals or terrorists and should never be given the chance to cause this sort of prosecutorial effort or expense or worse. Short of thorough vetting, the admission of adult refugees or visitors on non-migrant visas qualifies as a dangerous gamble each and every time. The Biden campaign may have found a short-term gratification immediately reversing Trump's travel ban, having called it vile and Islamophobic, but there was no sign of appropriate national security thoughtfulness about a replacement policy. Short of that, America needs to know in advance that for the sake of temporary pleasure and summarily jettisoning the policy without something to stand in its stead, the Biden administration will begin admitting visitors whose hearts, minds, and experiences in anarchic home countries like Libya, Somalia, Yemen, Syria, and Chad will remain unknown. Though these places brim with armed and bloodied extremist groups. The unacknowledged problem is that countries on the list have gone entirely ungoverned for years and therefore are unable to take an American request for information and intelligence. A good example of this is Libya, which remains a territory ruled by a fractious army, armed militias, and no real central government able to answer American mail about visa applicants from that country. Somalia and Yemen are no better, with the former having gone ungoverned by any recognized competent civil authority for 20 years of civil war, to the extent that most citizens born after 1991 have no birth certificates, driver's license, marriage papers, or criminal records. Armed factions destroyed all the records from before 1991. In 2018, federal prosecutors charged 20-something Somali refugee couple resettled in Tucson with 11 counts of repeatedly lying on their initial 2013 refugee applications in ungoverned Mogadishu and later again on their permanent legal residency application in Tucson about every single thing they entered into them, to include even their names, most notably, though, Mohammed Abdurrahman Osman and his wife Zainab Abdurrahman Mohammed never let on that he was a blooded Al-Shabaab terrorist fighter, as was his brother and entire extended family, nor that he provided aid and $32,000 in support to the brother after the brother coordinated a May 24, 2014 suicide bombing of a Djibouti restaurant and became an international fugitive. None of this could have happened under Trump's travel ban. neither would a 2019 federal indictment become necessary, alleging that one Yemeni admitted that to the United States to study English before the ban easily hid his deep involvement and experiences with a virtually anti-American jihadist militia. Ghaffar Mohammed Ibrahim Al-Azhar, 25, made legal entry into the United States in 2014, the same pre-travel ban year that a violent anti-American Ansar Allah battalions of the Houthi tribe stormed the capital of Sana'a, sparking an ongoing proxy civil war. He swore all of his visa applications while in front of an American officer in the U.S. Embassy that he had no affiliations with the Houthi rebels. He moved to Altoona, Pennsylvania. Not until May 2014 did the FBI learn via a tip that Al-Wazir had fought with the rebels and was posting all about it on social media. He allegedly unburdened himself of increasing fervent hatreds on his Facebook page, where he wished death to all Americans, especially Jews, and vowed he would stay on the path of violent jihad. The Bureau found online photos showing a heavily armed Al-Wazir and his brother with the Houthi rebels in Yemen. There can be little doubt that FBI agents feared what Al-Wazir might have wrought had he not been charged with lying to them and immigration fraud. Other countries are on the travel ban list for functional, quite apolitical reasons. Some of the countries are too hostile to the United States to ever collaborate on background checking visa applicants. Think Venezuela under Nicolas Maduro and Myanmar under a vicious military junta. The greatest value of Trump's travel restrictions list was that it eliminated high-stakes gamble that American security vetting systems could suss out terrorist actors from countries with governance problems. The Biden administration had the legal right to do exactly what it did, but removing the travel restrictions from these countries will almost certainly result in either more lucky catches, like those listed here, or tragic misses. Well said, Todd. Well said. Todd Bensman's one of our regular guests, and I'm just amazed. Wow. And I am going to boot somebody. I cannot believe the offensive material coming from one foolishly stupid person here. And he is gone. And I cannot believe it. Sorry about that stuff being there. Wow. And try and get back to the screen, and I'm having difficulty doing that. Oh boy. And here we go. Wow. So it's an amazing This is an amazing, amazing thing when you think about that Biden has dared to remove a ban that is protecting the United States, dared to remove it. Wow. Now, let's keep going into the news. And here we have Biden has stated that he would return to Obama's deal with Iran. So I said this poses a serious threat to every American's safety. Iran is not doing well. I don't know if you've heard this news, but Iran is having some real financial issues. Because of that, has lost a big they've had for many years, which is a place in the UN. And now that place is gone. What am I talking about? The Jerusalem Post ran an article, Iran loses UN voting rights over unpaid dues and blames the UN sanctions. This came out January 18th. Iran owes $16.2 million, more than any other country. Here we go. Iran and six other countries lost the right to vote in the UN General Assembly because they have not paid their dues, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said on Monday. Iran blamed U.S. sanctions for blocking the Islamic Republic from paying its required contribution to the UN. Guterres wrote a letter to the General Assembly President Volkan Bozkır of Turkey that the countries in arrears to the UN will have their UNGA voting rights suspended in accordance with the UN Charter, which calls for the suspension of voting rights if a member state fails to pay its fee for more than 2 years. Oh, so the sanctions have been in place how long? Yeah, let's think about that. Iran owes $16.2 million, more than any other country. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatizadeh said that funds designated for UN payments are frozen in two South Korean banks due to U.S. sanction. He said the Islamic Republic has a total of $7 billion in those banks. What's it doing outside the country? Yeah, they have $7 billion in places outside the country. Why is that? Khatizadeh demanded that the UN guarantee the payments are safely transferred without using U.S. banks. Given the United States has encroached upon Iran's international assets before the Islamic Republic of Iran insisted the UN not use an American intermediate bank to receive our country's membership fee, or that this organization guaranteed the financial transfer channel, Iran International News quoted him as saying the other countries losing their UNGA voting rights are Niger, Libya, the Central African Republic, Congo, Brazzaville, South Sudan, and Zimbabwe. Three more countries, Comoros, Sao Tome, and Principe in Somalia, will be allowed to continue to vote despite missing dues payments because they sufficiently demonstrated that they are incapable of paying. So, it's not just Iran, something to think about, but they are not doing well, according to this. Another thing that's going on that we need to think about is this other plan that is underway right now, and I'm kind of concerned with this one. I don't know if you're familiar with the Houthi. If you're not, you need to pay attention, because Joe Biden's appointees are okay with the Houthis. At the point where Trump left, one of his advisors was working on having the Houthis declared a terrorist entity. This is was extremely important. It would have made us, again, safer. But as the Middle East I covered, incoming Biden official calls for reversal of Houthi terror designation. National Security Advisor nominee Jake Sullivan says Trump administration move will only inflict more suffering on Yemeni people. This came out January 17th. The outgoing Trump administration decision to classify Yemen's Houthi rebels as terrorists will only cause more suffering for the people of that war-torn country, Joe Biden's nominee for National Security Advisor said Saturday. The rebels control much of Yemen and have faced a military offensive led by Saudi Arabia, with millions in Yemen depending on aid to survive. Designating the Houthis, also known as Ansar Allah, a terror group, is expected to halt many transactions with Houthi authorities, including bank transfers, payments for medical personnel, for food and fuel. Oh, what are you fueling? What is the fuel for? Think about this. What is the food for? Who are you supporting? Yeah, this is a terrorist group. Houthi commanders need to be held accountable. This is a quote. Houthi commanders need to be held accountable, but designating the whole organization will only inflict more suffering on Yemeni people and impede diplomacy critical to end the war, Biden's pick for National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan tweeted. The designation is set to come into force on January 19th, the eve of the inauguration of Biden, whose aides had hoped to mount a fresh push to end Yemen's six-year war. It is also seen as complicating the incoming U.S. leader's promised efforts to restart diplomacy with Iran, which has links to the Houthis. Yes, because they're financed by Iran. Ooh. So think about that. This is a group, another terror group that Iran finances, and Biden wants to engage with Iran and give them quite the deal. So in turn, he turns around and wants to have a deal with the Houthis because what? They are part and financed by the Iranians. Think about that. This is a Shiite group in Yemen, which is Sunni, pretty much what they would call Sunni territory. Not these two groups will always fight. So what is the likely humanitarian impact? The answer is large-scale famine on a scale that we haven't seen before. Mark Lowcock, the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, said Thursday. Lowcock said exemptions to allow aid agencies to deliver supplies, as suggested by Washington, would not be sufficient to avoid a famine. Huh? Yeah, it's not like it's going to be any different. Yeah, there is trouble there financially. There is trouble there with food-wise, and they have had humanitarian efforts brought in. This is not something new. The sad part here is we now have Joe Biden's appointees not catching, going totally against what is right for this country. Designating that group as a terror group would be what's right. And that was done. But reversing that is it's just insane. Now, Biden claimed in his inaugural speech that he would send legislation to open a road for amnesty. Now, I want you to think about that. The Washington Beacon has quite the story on this. I'm concerned. I hope you are too. Is that the right way for things to go? I don't think so. Here we go. The Washington Free Beacon story says Biden moves for mass amnesty in his first days as president. This came out January 20th. It's by Charles Fain Lehman. President Joe Biden on Wednesday will send legislation to Congress that would offer amnesty and a path to citizenship to the bulk of 11 million illegal immigrants currently in the United States, teeing up a potentially momentous struggle with Congress. Biden's proposal would substantially overhaul the immigration system, loosening key restrictions to dramatically increase legal immigration alongside its amnesty provisions. At the same time, it contains only a few gestures at enhanced border security, a sign of the Democratic Party's turn away from the compromise approach that characterized previous immigration reform efforts. The amnesty bill that Reagan signed in 86, as well as the two big amnesty bills that failed in 2007 and the Gang of Eight bill in 2014, all were presented as a grand bargain of amnesty for people who were already established, but enforcement measures to supposedly ensure we wouldn't have to be having another amnesty debate a few years down the road. Mark Krikorian, director of the Pro-Restriction Center for Immigration Studies, told the Washington Free Beacon, this bill rejects the concept altogether, and it's essentially just an amnesty bill with no enforcement. Biden cannot grant amnesty at this scale without legislative action. The bill, along with a host of executive orders, including an end to border wall construction and a reverse of the Trump administration's travel ban, represents a stark about-face from predecessor Donald Trump, reversing an aggressive immigration enforcement regime and cuts to legal immigration. But those changes are unlikely to be popular with Senate Republicans who have already blasted Biden's proposal. That could mean a challenge to Biden's legislative agenda straight out of the gate, as the Republican minority in the narrowly divided Senate stalls Biden's proposed changes. That could in turn lead to a major first loss for the new president, or more momentously, an end to the Senate's filibuster. The core of the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021, according to details released by the Biden transition team, is an 8-year path to citizenship for the overwhelming majority of Americans, estimated 11 million illegal residents. Those who pay taxes and pass criminal and national security background checks would be eligible for temporary protection, which in turn would become eligible for green cards after 5 years and citizenship 3 years after that. Beneficiaries of DACA, which they estimate at 640,000 people. And I want you to think about that number. 640,000 people. Wow. Temporary protected status, roughly 300,000. And certain farm workers would be able to obtain green cards immediately. Applicants will need to have been present in the United States as of January 2021, but that requirement can be waived under the Trump administration, who are here for family, unity, and other humanitarian purposes. If they were deported, I want you to think about this. They were not here for family, unity, and other humanitarian purposes. So, I want you to understand that this is a BS statement here to say that those who were deported under Trump who were here for family unity. Yeah, you're here for family unity if you're committing an act of terrorism. I don't think so. Some of this stuff is just mind-numbing. And this, again, this is Biden. I call him Dementia Joe. I thoroughly believe we will have a President Harris soon. And if Chief is right, who knows? We could have President Obama all over again. But we will see. We will see. I have heard many things in these past few days. All I can say is to still have hope. As Christians, we are to have hope in Christ. We are to pray for Biden. We are to pray for our leaders. So with that said, as much as I stand against the things that Dementia Joe is doing, because I feel it's against Christ and it's against this country, I will still pray for him, and I'll do that right now. Lord God, we ask that you would give Biden some sanity, that you would deliver the demons that are bothering him and possessing him, give him the ability, some clarity, Lord, and remove those who easily influence him. In your name, Lord Jesus, amen. Wow. Going on, I want to say that there is a lot of stories today about hatred. So I want to talk about how Islam and hate go hand in hand together. Why do I say that? Well, the Quran endorses this belief structure that Islam and hate go together. Let's look at the Quran, chapter 3, verse 19. I'm sorry, no, chapter 3, verse 85. If anyone desires a religion other than Islam, submission, which is submission to Allah, never will it be accepted of him. And hereafter, he will be in the ranks of those who have lost all spiritual good. Again, that's Quran 385. Quran 319 says, the only religion in the sight of God is Islam. Islam is an exclusive faith. It not only excludes those of other religions, it allows for physical attacks, fights, wars, and more as a method of spreading Islam. Islam allows Muslims to unite, stand against unbelievers. Quran 48:29 says, Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and those who are with him are strong against unbelievers, but compassionate among each other. Quran 9:73 says, O Prophet, strive hard against the unbelievers and the hypocrites, and be firm against them. Their abode is hell, and evil refuge indeed. Quran 3:151 says, he will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve, because they set up with Allah that for which he has sent down no authority, and their abode is the fire, and evil is the abode of the unjust. Quran 3:151. And if any believe in Allah and his messenger, we have prepared for those who reject Allah a blazing fire. This is Quran 48:13. So it's no surprise a teenager who may have questioned Islam is now receiving 30 messages of hate a minute. Think about that. 30 messages of hate a minute. We call that cyberbullying here in the United States. Think about that. Cyberbullying. Well, Russia today, Russia news today, if you're not familiar, or this is actually from Sputnik, I'm sorry, Sputnik News, actually has the article. It's by Max Gorbachev. And it's kind of shocking. The development, it starts out, the development comes at a time when France is engaged in a debate about the freedom of speech. The issue sprung up following the beheading of a teacher by a Muslim man. The perpetrator killed Samuel Paty after he learned that he had showed his students satirical characters of the Prophet Muhammad that were perceived as insulting by Muslims. A French teenager was accused of insulting Islam last year, is getting 30 hateful messages per minute a year. This is a year later. That is 43,200 messages a day. Every day. Her lawyer, Richard Malka, told the Times that the girl, only known as Mila, has had to go into hiding and study from home, where she is under police protection. He said 50 social media users who have sent the teenager death threats have been identified by the police. In October, authorities sentenced a 23-year-old man after he shot a video in which he mimicked cutting the girl's head off. Last January, the girl reportedly got into an argument with an Instagram user. During a live stream, a Muslim user called her a dirty lesbian. Mila's profile is adorned with an LGBT flag and a... Wow. And she replied to that, the Quran is full of hate. Islam is a bleep religion. That's what I think, is what she said. After the video went viral, Mila began receiving death and rape threats as well as accusations of racism. She recorded a video in response in which she dismissed the allegations and said she hated religion in general. She said, I'm not racist, not at all. I don't have any issues with saying that what I think. I hate religion, she says. I said what I thought. You will not make me regret it. However, the threats didn't stop, and the teenager had to quit her school in the city of Lyon and move to a military-run boarding school. Despite that fact, her principal prohibited her from using social media. Last November, she took to TikTok, where she again criticized Islam. A month later, someone leaked messages she had sent to her friends, where she revealed the school where she studies. According to her parents, she was then expelled by the French Ministry of Armed Forces and said she was to return home for her safety and the safety of her peers. Mila's lawyers, okay, she's at a military school. And the French military can't protect her? Are you saying that there are so many Muslims in the French military that she cannot be protected in France? This is important to understand. We're talking about the French are becoming a minority is what they're saying. The native French are becoming a minority. So Mila has appeared once on television where she reiterated her stance. She said, I absolutely do not regret what I said. It was really what I thought. I don't have to hide for this reason. I don't have to stop living for this. However, the girl said she felt a little bit sorry for people who practice religion in peace and whom she might have hurt with her comments. So as President Macron responded, well, when the video went viral last year, French President defended the girl, saying the country's laws clearly state that one has the right to blaspheme, to criticize, and to caricature religions. Quote, the Republican order is not a moral order. What is outlawed is to incite hatred and attack dignity, Macron said. In this debate, we have lost sight of the fact that Mila is an adolescent. We owe her protection at school, in her daily life, and in her movements. The president also said that by finding the girl a new school, the government had fulfilled its responsibilities. Did they? Did they? They found her a school, a military school, and forbid her and no one else to staying off social media. So she's treated differently. What has she done that is different than any other teenager except express herself? Oh, and it wasn't politically correct. But that's not good enough for the French military. They're too cowardly. Remember, they're the ones who ran rather than defend their country. That's World War II for you. France, the country with the largest Muslim minority population in Europe, is guided by the laïcité principle. state secularism. Among other things, it does not allow curbing freedom of expression to protect the feelings of a particular community, as this would undermine the country's unity. The development comes at a time when France is engaged in a debate about the freedom of speech and freedom of expression. The longstanding issue sprung up again after a Muslim migrant beheaded a schoolteacher, after the latter showed satirical characters of the Prophet Muhammad, which was required. It was a required lesson on freedom of expression. They're not stating this. It was required under law. Samuel Paty got in trouble for not showing this picture to his Muslim students who wanted to not see it. That's where he got in trouble. He gave them a choice to leave and not be offended. So how did Samuel Paty offend Muslims here? He gave them a chance to not be offended. Commenting on the situation with his French teenager, Abdallah Zekri, general delegate of the French Council for Muslim Faith, said the girl knows exactly what she has done. They who sow reap. Keep in mind what this man is. He's a delegate of the French Council for the Muslim Faith. She's saying, this man says, her comments are not covered by freedom of expression and are insulting. Wow. Why is that important? Well, Emmanuel Macron and French Muslim leaders have signed a charter pledging to combat political Islam. This comes from 5pillarsuk.com, which this kind of really surprised me. State-approved French Muslim leaders have signed a charter denouncing accusations of racism against France and pledging to recognize equality between men and women and to combat political Islam. After several weeks of negotiation, French Council for Muslim Worship, which is approved by the state to represent Islam in France, formally approved a charter of principles for Islam in France. The text demanded by President Emmanuel Macron in November as part of his offensive against separatism also affirms the compatibility of Islam with secularism. The text states, can you imagine being told that your freedom of expression is gone? If you had asked me that a couple of years ago, I probably would have laughed at you. But we now have a commie in charge of our country. We now have a man who loves Islam in charge of this country. And this man has dementia. He will do whatever he is told. This is a problem. This is definitely a problem. Let's look at another thing that happened this week, and that would be another important item. And let me just get that one up. In the UK, a Muslim woman recounted her harrowing confrontation with Islamophobia in the form of a man asking questions. Robert Spencer caught this on January 19th. And it's up on Jihad Watch. He writes, the only reason why this piece was even written or published by Metro. Okay, let me explain. The article is titled by the Metro, "When Confronted with Islamophobia Head On, I Chose to React Calmly." That was by Arab Saeed. Again, Arab Saeed and Metro feel the need to do all they can to ensure that Britons don't associate Islam with violence because a prominent terrorist associated the two. Meanwhile, the Capitol riot is widely associated with Christianity. No, it had nothing to do with Christianity. But, yeah, that's what they're saying. Will Metro run a piece by Christians assuring that people that she thinks the Capitol rioters were bad? So as to ensure that no one will think ill of Christianity? Of course not. Note also the bait and switch here, Spencer says. The headline, "When confronted with Islamophobia head on, I chose to react calmly," gives the impression that she was subjected to harassment, discrimination, or even violence. Turns out, however, she was just asked a few pointed questions. This is something to be smeared as Islamophobia. Yeah. So even asking questions is not allowed now. This is yet another indication of how Islamophobia is an illegitimate conflation. A phobia is something, it's an illegitimate fear. To put Islam in front of it, do we have a legitimate fear? I mean, who is the one bombing us? Who is the one who killed thousands on one day here in the United States? Yes, think about that. Who keeps attempting to kill us? It is Islam, people. It is a justified fear. It is not a phobia. I can say that because you can look at what their faith teaches. Look at what their scriptures teach. It is a very real reason for fear. Now, I'm going to say, start watching for my next book. I am working with people now that I should be getting this published in the future. I'm holding off until I find that publisher, but I think this book needs to be out. So if I have any issues, I'm just going to self-publish at this point. But I think I put out most of this on my blog. If you want to go to paulsutliff.blogspot.com and you look at these things, please leave a comment, because the more comments I get, the more traffic I get. So please do that. Let me keep going. Pakistan is demanding students become required to study the Quran. Now, this is important to understand because it, you know, depending on how we read this, it could be, I want you to think about, it's not that long ago that we required, it's only a couple hundred years ago, we required that you had to learn, be taught the Bible if you went to a school in the United States. The exception, there was no exception. It was a requirement in the United States. So this actually came out, it came out a ways back, but they're touting it this week. They're actually touting it as brand new. So I'm actually surprised. I didn't check the date of the article, but what's killing me is that this article was actually promoted today. And Pakistani Christian students will be forced to study Quran if the government's plans move ahead. The governor of Pakistan, this comes from Christian Post. The governor of Pakistan, Punjab province, has asked all provincial universities to recommend how the teaching of the Quran with translation could be made part of the syllabus, saying that Islamic holy book is a complete code of life and will help students win the favor of Allah Almighty. It will be compulsory for students to attend lectures on the Quran, Punjab Governor Chaudhry Muhammad Sarwar said at the news conference, saying that the Quran will also help them become good human beings, according to New International. The news conference was held to announce that the governor, who is the chancellor of universities, has constituted a 7-member committee of vice chancellors to submit recommendations on how to make the Quran part of the syllabus. I want you to think about that. What would happen here if we suddenly demanded that every course have required teachings of the Bible in it? Would people be upset? Probably. But since this is going on and it is a Muslim country and the Muslims are demanding it, and they're going to demand that every non-Muslim have to have these requirements also. So this is, you know, something to think about. Again, this is a Muslim country. It is there. It's. I would say it's probably within their rights, but it's just as it was within our rights not too long ago to have that demand that people learn, think about Christian, learn about the Bible is what we did. We had that requirement. Now, I want to go back a bit. Here we go. Okay, I'm trying to keep. I think I skipped something, so here we go. Let's think about Islamophobia again. I want you to think about what is there a reason to fear Islam? The reason why I'm asking this question is there was an article this week in from Australia. They have a Muslim man. He's out of jail for 2 weeks. His name was Radwan Dakak. And he's out of jail. Within 2 weeks, he is now accessing material that supports beheadings. This came out the 16th by Georgina Mitchell. And this is smh.com.au. A man has been charged after he allegedly breached a court order less than 2 weeks after he was released from prison by accessing online material that supported executions, beheadings, and torture. Radwan Dakak, 25, from Denistone in Sydney's northwest, was jailed for a maximum of 18 months in December last year on 2 charges of unknowingly associating with a member of a terror group. He was released with time served, with his sentence expired on January 1st this year. The day before he was released, the federal court imposed an interim control order on Mr. Dakak, which included numerous conditions, including a curfew from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., reporting daily to police at Maramata, and a prohibition of accessing extremist material. Mr. Dakak was arrested on Saturday by members of the high-risk terror offenders team after he allegedly breached the order. He was charged with 3 counts of contravening federal court control order, which carries a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment. AFP Acting Commander Alex Nicholson, who is in charge of enduring risk investigations, told a media conference on Saturday that Mr. Dakak had an extremist ideology aligned to the ISIS terror network. We will allege the man failed to comply with a condition of his control order by accessing material online that supported the carrying out of executions, beheadings, and torture less than 2 weeks since his release from jail. A man is now the 5th person arrested by the AFP breaching a control order since July. Could it be that there is no reforming people? That's the thing that people don't understand. They expect people to come out changed out of prison. That is a mistake to think that. That is often what people seem to think. You spend your time, you're going to come out, and you're going to be a better person. No. Sadly, often what happens is they learn to be a more evil person, because who are they hanging with all that time? They're hanging with other people who have no problems with being evil. They learn how to be more evil, how to be more devious. Yeah. Now, my next article comes from Next article comes from Al Jazeera, and I want to talk about this one a little bit before I get into it. This article exposes the UNRWA educational materials as being filled with anti-Semitism, anti-Israel hate, and incitement. Many of the school materials within the United States for your 9th and 10th grade social studies classes are basically filled and replete with this kind of anti-Semitic message. Why do I say that? I was just on a forum this weekend, a conservative teachers forum, and they were talking about how they are told to teach that Israel is an apartheid state, and none of them want to do it, and they all refuse. I also refused. In fact, I encouraged my partners to refuse. And many of them had no idea it was not an apartheid state. The people encouraging this are state regents. Yeah. They put this stuff into the curriculum. And it's in many curriculums across the United States, to the ignorance of many social studies teachers. The truth is that social studies teachers are the true generalists in a high school. They can't know everything. I don't know what we can do to get their brains to the point where they know what's right. I want to teach them what's true and what's not true about Islam. I've tried putting a book out for them. I put one out called What Social Studies Teachers Need to Know About Islam. It's on Amazon. Will anybody buy it? Probably, you know, I'd say buy it, give it to your local social studies teacher, because there's no religion in it. It's all history. It's all history written by Muslims for Muslims. And this is the thing teachers do not know. The issue becomes, once you know these things, you want nothing to do with Islam. The reason is simple. It is a place, it teaches hate. To say any other thing, to say it teaches love, is to be totally ignorant of Islam. You cannot say that without being ignorant. So let me get into this article. Study finds UNRWA, this is again the United Nations. This is the refugee group. The United Nations Relief and Work Agency. New study of educational materials used by them, by the UNRWA, which serves Palestinian refugees, has found that the materials contain anti-Israel, anti-Semitic racism, encouragement of terrorism and jihad, and rejection of peace with the Jewish state. Just the kind of thing you would expect from the UN, right? You would think that they would be thinking, you know, trying to get a peaceful message out, being the United Nations. With that blue hat stuff where you can't fire at anybody. You're supposed to be peace, agents of peace. But they're disseminating tools that encourage terrorism, jihad, and rejection of peace. Shocking. This report by the Organization of Impact, SE, which monitors school curriculum, claims that this content violates the UN's own requirements set by the cultural organization, UNESCO, UNESCO, which demands respect for the other and commitment to peace, and which prescribe hate speech, incitement, and bias. Contrary to these requirements, the report said the UNRWA materials, which are used to teach over 500,000 children, encourage jihad, encourage terrorism, and martyrdom, and present terrorists as heroes. No rejection of violence is included. Some of this material is copied directly from the Palestinian Authority textbooks, which are notorious for such content. The material also present no content that urges peace or reconciliation with Israel, viewing the Jewish state solely as the enemy. There is no positive depiction of the other in the materials, according to the report, which depict non-Arabs and non-Palestinians in a purely negative way. Europe is demonized for the Crusades, and there is no information presented about the historical narrative of the Jews or Israel. Israel is consistently demonized with lies and conspiracy theories, such as false claims that Israel has sought to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque, dumped toxic waste in the West Bank, and robs Palestinian antiquities. The material place enormous emphasis on the Palestinians' war against Israel, including anti-Israeli rhetoric and exhortations to violence, even in discussing unrelated subjects such as mathematics. Despite the requirements of neutrality, Impact SE found that the UNRWA educational materials show a violent and uncompromising bias against Israel, adopting hyperbolic Palestinian talking points to do so. This includes referring to Israel as the occupation and the Zionists, calling Jerusalem the eternal capital of Palestine. This is the funny thing. Palestine, I'm just going to go off a little bit. Palestine is a name given to Israel by the Romans to insult the Jews. It means land of the Philistines. Are Muslims now claiming they're Philistines? Yeah. They call the West Bank, a security barrier. The West Bank security barrier, the racist expansion and annexation fence. I was put there to stop a huge amount of terrorist actions. You know what? Been pretty successful. The materials often simply erase Israel and the Jews as a whole. Israel's name is rarely mentioned, and maps of the region show the entirety of Israel as Palestine. Jewish history in the land of Israel and the Middle East in general is almost completely ignored, and Israel is instead accused of trying to Judaize the area. Impact SC, which is based in Jerusalem, has also studied curriculum in Israel and throughout the region, and did note a few positive trends. Israel's name is mentioned in a few more cases than was found in past reviews. Some libels have been removed, such as the baseless claim that Israel is stealing Palestinian water, and some Quranic verses calling for jihad do not appear. Some. Notice they said some. It doesn't mean that others are not there. There's more than one. That's a very measured, positive statement. And this is what your United Nations money goes for. This is a good reason why the United States should not be financing it. I can say this over and over again. Hello, Eric. Hello, Green Beasley. Thank you for joining us. Some of this stuff is just mind-boggling. I mean, when you start listening to this, my biggest issue is that it's actually happening. And that's why I covered the stuff on hate a little while ago. That's why I talked about the verses from the Quran that support hate. And I only cited a few of them. Understand that. There are many. I didn't even come close to naming many of them. There are many. Let's keep going. My next piece here, again from Russia Today. Islamic State-inspired U.S. soldier arrested over alleged plot to bomb American troops and attack New York City 9/11 memorial. This came out January 19th. An American soldier has been arrested on terrorism charges, including suggesting wiring explosives into buildings as part of an Islamic State plot to kill U.S. troops, as well as allegedly planning an attack on the 9/11 memorial. Ohio man Cole James Bridges, 20, was held in Georgia on Tuesday and charged with the assistance of a foreign terrorist organization and the attempted murder of U.S. military service members. The U.S. Attorney's Office said in a statement, the private first class, also known as Cole Gonzalez, had expressed his support for the terrorist Islamic State group. Islamic State, doesn't matter what you call them. He did this on social media, according to criminal complaint unsealed Tuesday in Manhattan federal court. After joining the U.S. Army in late 2019, Bridges began unknowingly communicating with a member of the FBI in October of last year, with the Bureau employee posing as an Islamic State supporter who claimed to be in touch with a terrorist group in the Middle East. The soldier is then said to have used his Army training to guide supposed Islamic State fighters about potential attacks in New York City, including on the 9/11 memorial. In December of 2020, Bridges allegedly provided diagrams of specific military maneuvers to help Islamic State fighters maximize the lethality of attacks on U.S. troops, while also pledging his allegiance to the terrorists. He alleged to betray the oath he swore to defend the United States by attempting to provide ISIS with tactical military advice to ambush and kill his fellow service members, said Manhattan U.S. Attorney Audrey Strauss. If convicted, Bridges faces a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. This is why he should not be facing charges of treason. He should be facing terrorism. He should not be facing charges of terrorism. He should be facing a charge of treason. Treason has a death penalty. We don't have to worry about how he's going to behave when he gets out in 20 years. It's done. It's over with. His sentence is short. And then after that, people can rest and sleep. They don't have to worry about how he's going to behave in 20 years. We're finding out that people getting out of prison after committing acts of terrorism are willing to do it all over again. It's an ideology that does not get changed when imprisoned. Encouraged. It gets encouraged. So they're trying to kill people in the Philippines. What about other places? Let's look at this in the Philippines. Let's look in the Philippines. I mean, so they're trying to kill people in the United States. Why is this so consistent? That's the thing to think about. It's not just happening here. If it was an aberration, you would think it would happen one place. You know, that would be it. But that's not all of it. Binar News writes, Philippine commander suspected Indonesian bomber says parents forced her to join the Islamic State. Let me get into this article. A young Indonesian who was arrested in the southern Philippines on suspicion of preparing for a suicide bombing mission claimed that her now dead parents had compelled her to join the Islamic State group. The region's top military commander told Binar News. Rezki Fantasia Wule, alias Sisi Anini Isarani, who is believed to be in her teens or early 20s, was allowed to meet with Indonesian Consul General Dicky Fabrian on Wednesday, said Lieutenant General Corleto Vinluan, the chief of the military's Western Mindanao Command, who attended the meeting. The meeting was private in the confinement areas where Sisi is being held. The suspect detailed her forced joining in the militant group. Rule's Indonesian parents both blew themselves up in a twin bombing at a church on Jolo Island in southern Philippines 2 years ago, according to Philippine authorities. Yeah, you think that she's at risk of doing the same thing? Yes, think about that. Last October, Philippine troops arrested Rule with two Filipinas suspected of plotting suicide attacks and who were married to members of the Abu Sayyaf group, a pro-Islamic state group based in the Philippine South. Velion said Fabrian wanted to meet with Rule to make sure if she is really an Indonesian by seeing her in person. The meeting took place at the Criminal Investigation and Detection Group detention facility where she's being held. Sisi narrated that at first she was not aware, and then there was this forced marriage to one of the suicide bombers, Vinulin told Binar News. He was referring to Andy Basso, a suspected Indonesian suicide bomber in training who was believed to have been slain by Philippine government troops on August 2020. However, his body has not been recovered. Vinluin said the Indonesian diplomat was also accompanied by Indonesian police and military officials, but they were not permitted to talk to the suspect. I want you to think about this. This is happening in the Philippines, too, and when the only thing that's in common, again, is Islam. Is it happening someplace else? Let's look at Nigeria. Oh, the things that have been happening in Nigeria that I've been talking about on this show just are shocking and revolting. Let's go one more. And here we go. Come on. Okay, residents flee Islamist attack on town in northeast Nigeria. This is by Reuters. Government troops and several hundred residents, again, this came out the 17th, several hundred residents have been forced to flee after Islamic insurgents overran a town in northeast Nigeria in an attack claimed by Islamic State security sources said on Saturday. Friday's assault on Marte, which lies on Lake Chad in Borno State, came just 2 months after residents were driven from their homes by Islamic attacks and had returned to the town under a government program. It underscores this precarious security situation in northeast Nigeria, where Boko Haram and Islamic State West African Province are active, and the difficulties the government faces as it tries to return people displaced by the violence. Soldiers fled during Friday's assault, and Marta remained under the control of the militants on Saturday, the sources said. An unspecified number of wounded people could not be reached, and it was not immediately clear whether there was any had been any deaths. The source said they believed the insurgents were part of the Islamic State. and an army statement said troops tactically withdrew to defend against a militant attack outside Marta. Troops had effectively destroyed 7 gun trucks and decimated an unconfirmed number of attackers, it said. Islamic State later posted a statement on its Amaq news channel on Telegram, claiming responsibility for the attack. Without giving further details, it said 7 people had been killed, 1 captured, and that its fighters had seized weapons, ammunition, and 6 four-wheel drive vehicles, as well as burning down an army barracks. Sources from the military and police said that residents had fled to the nearby Dikwa local government area, and the situation is grim, one said. On Thursday, 5 soldiers were killed and 15 others wounded by a landmine planted by Boko Haram in the remote village. So this is ongoing, people. Ongoing. And this is where Islam feels it is in the majority. Think about that. That's what they think, and this is what they are doing. When they think they're in the majority, is that someplace you should feel safe? And sadly, the answer is no. Let's talk about an attack in Sweden. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this one, too, but this one, wow. Let's see if this one time it works. And it did not work. Oh, the joy. Trying things different ways is fine. When you don't win one way, you can win another. Here we go. I get news from samnytt.se, and I recommend it to everyone. Just use Google Translate, and it will translate the page for you. But this is the conservative news for Sweden. If you don't know, Sweden is a socialist state that controls its media. This is extremely important to understand because this is one of the only free, only news sources that is not run by the government. So in this respect, it's probably quite expensive for them. But the people who are behind this are doing quite the good job. So they're talking about a terror attack on a Christian church in an Islam-dominated Stockholm suburb. So on the night, this came out the 20th, by the way, on the night before Wednesday, the 19th, what are believed to be anti-Christian people attack Spånga Church in the vulnerable, immigrant-dense, and Islam-dominated Stockholm suburb of Tensta. 3 firebombs, so-called Molotov cocktails, were thrown at the church. The terrorists better not succeed in setting the church premises on fire despite 1 or more of the bombs penetrating window panes. It's a strong symbolic act, says the parish priest Jerker Alsterlund, about the attack, and adds that it is probably about people with disgust for Christianity. The church is located on the outskirts of Tensta and on the other side, flanked by Rinkeby. Both areas are dominated by immigrants from Muslim countries and are classified as vulnerable areas due to failed integration and major problems with crime and Muslim radicalism. Ooh. Any surprise at this point? They feel they are a majority. They are doing what they can to destroy a Christian church because they believe they are the majority. This happened at 4 o'clock at night. There was an explosion at the Spånga Church. A firebomb was thrown at the church gate and 2 at the building's windows, which were smashed. Fortunately, the fire did not get a foothold of the church's furniture. The police cordoned off the area for technical investigation and classified the scene as arson. No person has been arrested for the terrorist attack. Yes. They won't arrest anyone. They probably won't find anyone. Unfortunately, this is becoming the reality in Sweden. There's too many people who would do this crime. It happens too often. Churches in Sweden are being attacked regularly. It's not a new crime there. This is happening almost daily in Sweden. Sweden decided in 2015, that it would take anybody coming from Syria and make them citizens. All they had to do was say, I am from Sweden. I mean, I am from Syria. And they automatically became Swedish citizens. I was in the government of with the government of Sweden, and I was just shocked hearing this from one of their members of parliament. I was just shocked. I think about that a lot, and I think about how there was no questions asked. They didn't do any vetting. They just said they didn't have to have any proof that they were from Syria. They didn't need a birth certificate. They didn't need a passport. They didn't need anything. You could have been purple, green, yellow, orange, whatever, and all you had to say was, I'm from Syria. And all of a sudden, you became a Swedish citizen. That's how quick it was. Some of these things, you sit there and go, why? Why? Holy cow. And here we go. Get this next article. And here we go. This write-up, and now what's happening in the what's happening in Europe still is there a massive, massive Muslim migration. People in the United States, when they read these articles, if they say refugee, they only use the term refugee when they think that Americans are reading. And in this titled, it says, life in Hull is the same as in Iraq, says refugee who wants council housing after fleeing war-torn Middle East. The term refugee is inaccurate because these are Muslim migrants. Everybody in Europe calls these people economic migrants. They came for a, quote, better life. What they came was for, if you listen to what they say more than what they claim, they came to have a financially better life, but they also came to make the countries Islamic, which would then make them impoverished because there's a lot of things you can't do under Islam. And that, again, let's talk about this article. This woman comes from Iraq, and the article, again, is titled, She Wants a Council House. She wants all this stuff for free. This is something to think about. It's an expected entitlement. This is a mother of four, a refugee. Again, a Muslim migrant who fled war-torn Middle East after her relatives were killed, she says. In Hull, it's the same as Iraq. Go back, if that's what you think. Since arriving in the city, the mother says she's been left mostly bedbound and reliant on a wheelchair after enduring squalor at her home and having to wash in her kitchen sink. The mother of four says her life in Hull, in fact, is hell. Adding, when I think about Iraq and Hull, they are the same to me. When I came here, my health condition worsened and are getting worse day by day in this house. Oh, Hull, I want to see what kind of medical treatment you get there. Yeah. She says she cannot walk, talk, or eat. Yet she's doing an awful lot of talking. Be doing a lot of eating because she's still alive. All night long, she says she worries about the house. How is she taking care of her kids if she stays in her bed all day? Ms. Hassan and her children moved to Syria after relatives were killed in the Iraq War, where they were provided with food and shelter from the United Nations. But when conflict broke out in Syria in 2021, the UN moved the family to Hull. Ms. Hassan explained, after war broke out, we were brought to Hull as we were under the threat of being killed. We had to escape for our lives. The family says it was placed into their private rented house in West Hull on their arrival in the city 8 years ago. Since then, Ms. Hassan claims there has been no maintenance carried out in the house, while also stating there's no heating and there's damp on the walls. She said, I open the windows at night because I can't breathe from the damp inside the house. Situation is reminding me and re-traumatizing me from past experiences. Yeah. claims the house is freezing and they don't do anything. She claims that there's no heat, there's no maintenance. She says she fell down the stairs and now needs an operation. When you listen to these stories, I'm just kind of mind-blown that this is even picked up, that there's any shred of truth in it. I'd be surprised. My issue, again, is when you start looking at what's happening. The majority of those coming to Europe are all men, almost all men. I've seen this with my own eyes. You know, it's one thing to see it in pictures on the web. It's another thing to see it in person. Everything I saw and had been told about the mass Muslim migration into Europe was true, that it was mostly young people of military age. That's true. That there were hardly any women. That's true. This stuff is real. Now with Biden in charge and his opening the door to Yemen, to Iraq, to Iran, to Syria, to Turkey, to all these countries, that even includes North Korea, because that's one of those countries that were banned by this, quote, Muslim ban that was never a Muslim ban. Yemen. All these countries where terrorism is supported. Will that Muslim migration happen to the United States tomorrow? I have some serious concerns. I have real serious concerns. How will we protect the United States under pro-communist, pro-Muslim Biden? The only thing I am left with is prayer. That is the only way we can, as Christians, protect our country now more than ever. We need to pray for the country. We need to stand up and be counted as believers in Christ. Because what's going to happen under Biden is targeting as well. He has sworn to target people who supported Trump. I refuse to listen to his inaugural speech. He's a pretender. He did not legally get that vote, as far as I'm concerned. We have a man who has dementia in office. That's scary all the way around. What will happen next? I can't tell you. I'm not ready for what comes next. this is crazy. What is going to happen next? I don't know. What I do know is that this world is going to change. Will Christians be targeted? Will patriots be targeted? If you look at what Biden is claiming, it sounds like that's what's going to happen. So on another note, for people to laugh, Twitter has given President Biden a Twitter account called POTUS. Well, could that be because Biden was not allowed to have all of Trump's followers transferred to him, because that's what he wanted and he asked for? I mean, if you're on Twitter and you were following President Trump, who got banned, would you want Joe Biden all of a sudden able to send you messages? Not me. Not me. What's going to happen next? I'm waiting to find out. I think it's time to get on our knees and pray. We're in a spot where there's not much that we can do to protect America. All I can think of is there are actions currently in place. There are Republicans in office that are swearing that they will impeach President Biden. There are people who are actually claiming they're starting the process I don't know if that's the right way for things to go, because that puts Harris in office. And it's the very same reason that people did not want to impeach Obama, because they were scared of Biden. And now he is president. So I'm a little concerned. I think Harris is more dangerous than Biden. I honestly believe that. Will we not impeach Biden for that reason? I don't know. If we impeach Biden and we impeach Harris, who's next? Nancy Pelosi. Oh. Then that 25th Amendment group, that is the perfect group to, there's a perfect reason to get rid of drunk Nancy. Can you imagine having an alcoholic as, yeah. It's bad enough we've had sex addict Bill Clinton in office. Now we're talking about dementia in office. This is the best that Democrats have to offer. This is truly sad. Hello, Mask-Free America. Glad to have you here. I am going to end early because I am down with the amount of news I have. Unless anybody wants to call in and talk about what they think we're facing. I'll open the mic right now. You can call in 319-527-6706. Press 1 if you want to talk. What do you think America is facing after what I've shared today? Love to hear your thoughts. I'm a little concerned. From what I've shared, the news I've shared today, we are not facing anything positive. I have heard stories that tell of some promise down the road, but I can't put any faith in those because I have nothing behind them at this point. I just like to make them right. On the better side of news, I have, again, I think I said at the beginning, I have found a possible publisher. I'm waiting to find out more information on that. And I have a place, somebody that will republish my book, Civilization Jihad and the Myth of Modern Islam. We're going to do a second edition. And that's the good news this week. And say that's the good news. Well, no one's called in, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to send us off with Toby Keith's Ain't That America. All right. Here we go. I just got to get there. The joy of, I did not plan to run out of news, but this just wasn't enough. Actually, Red, White, and Blue, Toby Keith. Here we go.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Here Uncle Sam put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole of the red, white, and blue.
bad when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a statue of liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. And it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. Of the red, white, and blue.